and welcome to episode 78 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about all types of topics in tabletop gaming. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Sydney.
Today we're talking about the perfect game store. We may not have found it, but we'll talk about what it might look like and what we don't want to see in it. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. And a thank you to our newest patron, Eric Huffman. A huge thank you to all our other patrons as well.
Thanks, Kitty, and welcome, Sydney.
Hi.
Sydney's replacing Josh, apparently just for this week. Although the last time Josh left the country,
lose him for a couple weeks there.
Yeah, he didn't come back for an episode that I expected him to be back on, and I actually thought he was dead.
And without a contact.
Yeah, we thought he would have been, like, kidnapped by gorillas or something.
Well, he went to
Nicaragua?
Nicaragua, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so this time he's in Iceland. Yeah. I feel like it's a little bit safer.
Yeah, Iceland in the middle of the winter. It's got to be nice there.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So,
yeah.
I'm just assuming so.
Hypothermia.
Hypothermia. So that's our first announcement, I guess, as Josh isn't here. I'm still waiting for the Board Game Geek mini badge approval. That process apparently is not quick, but it's in process.
Who knew?
I know, right? I have a correction from last week's episode. I said last week I said Capricorn was this weekend. Really what I meant is Capricorn is this weekend as of today. And Sydney happens to be, you're on the board, right?
Yes, I am. And I'm super excited about it. Capricorn is a science fiction convention and I love science fiction conventions. They've been doing a really good job of getting their gaming up because it's a niche they're trying to fill. So it's actually this weekend, February 15th through 18th. In the Westin Chicago North Shore, and they're doing a really cool thing this year. They actually have gaming passports. So if you show up and get one of those passports in the game room and you play certain types of games, you get stamps and stickers. And those stamps or stickers, I forget which, they give you entries into the raffle. And these raffles have really cool prizes, including games donated by Tabletop Game Talk. They have an author, artist, and gaming guest of honors. And the gaming guest of honor is Monica Valentinelli. And she's pretty awesome. She's been a part of a lot of games, so.
So if you can't tell, Sydney's my wife, and she can just keep on talking without any problem. Nice work. Yeah, so Terrence, one of our probably biggest friends of the show, he goes through all of our shows and, like,
tags
all the games on BGG. He is the chair of this one, right? Mm-hmm. You guys don't have co-chairs. It's just one chair.
Nope, he's the chair.
So he's, like, doing with all of it.
Super
he's
in charge. Very exciting.
Yep. So they reached out and they asked if we could donate games. So we donated. It's kind of the theme for this sci-fi convention is exploring.
Expanding universes.
Yeah, expanding universes. So we did. We have some Firefly games in there. We have some Star Trek games in there. We have some Star Wars games in there. Mm-hmm. And then the grand prize is terraforming Mars.
Nice.
So a whole big box of games that are all
you can,
like,
tell I was super involved in the choices of this. And I'm like, oh, wow, that sounds good.
So it's going to be fun. I'm going to be there Thursday night, probably around 7, and probably the same time on Friday, most of the day Saturday. Sunday is a coin toss right at this moment. But I'll be there quite a bit and probably hang out in the game room most of that time. I have a bunch of red stickered games. So the red stickers, red stickies are the games I haven't played. So I'm going to bring a bunch of those and try to get them played over that weekend. So that's my goal. And that's this weekend. So this weekend, let's say, and because we don't know if you don't listen to it on Tuesday, this weekend, February 15th through 18th, 2018.
Sure.
There we
go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Contest, giveaway. One of these days I'll get it right.
I'm changing the text there for you.
We are doing a double giveaway this month. So this month we're giving away Charterstone. We're giving away two copies of it to two different people. So one copy to one person, one copy to another person. It's really hard to say that and make it clear. So I think I got that. There was some confusion in some of the emails that I got. You can enter by emailing us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Put in the subject matter or subject line, February giveaway. You have to enter by February 23rd, midnight local time. I will track it down. If it's, I'm going to look and, like, nope, midnight pass where you were. So those people in the UK, they have to enter sooner than those. Well, Australia has to enter the soonest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just saying, I'm going to check. But anyway,
Alaska, you've got some time.
Yes. Basically what happens is I wake up Saturday morning and I gather all the names. So February 23rd is when you need to enter by. And good luck to everybody. I've tried to reply. So if you just give me your if you send me the email and you just say, hey, I'm in the U.S., which is another thing, give me your full name and that you're in the U.S. or that you're willing to spend about $100 for shipping. both of those are fine. So I don't want to rule out the international crowd. It's just really expensive to ship things to you. So if you're okay with paying for shipping, I'm okay putting you in the drawing. But yeah, if you put something in there that's more than that, I usually try to reply back. Sort of depends on how busy I am that weekend, but or that week. So anyway, on to our next segment, Kickstarters. I decided not to back Warpgate. I know. It's one of those things where I'm less looking at it. And I'm going to I will have this as a review probably next week for Centuri Saga. And this the two are fairly similar. Warpgate. It's really hard to say. I think
that's why you chose not to back it, because you cannot pronounce the name.
It has a lot of Kickstarter extras. So if you are interested in a sci-fi 4X-ish game, definitely look at the Kickstarter, because you're going to get a ton of bonus everythings. But I decided to go with Gentis. Is that right? Am I saying that one right?
Sure.
Okay. This week, so this is the one I'm backing. This is the 2-4 player civ building game that has like kind of a cool action selection mechanism where it has this time track. And when you select an action, it takes a certain amount of time. So in any given round, you can only select so many actions. Do you want to take a lot of short actions? Do you want to take a couple big actions? It just looks really cool. And it's the deluxified edition. And I love the term deluxified. So it works for me. So that's what I backed. This week, I'm adding a couple new to the watch list. The first one that is CO2 Second Chance. I have not played CO2, the original one. It is one of those games that gets talked about in kind of a underground sort of way. Like, oh my God, CO2 is such an amazing game.
You're so cool if you've played CO2.
Exactly. And so I'm like, well, I don't have it. It was like a very limited run. And then they decided to, they upgraded the components, the visual appeal. I guess there's some argument on whether or not people like the old art versus the new art. That'll always happen.
I know. So, every time they change the art.
Yeah. So, but they did upgrade it.
Divides everyone.
Yep. But the components are all upgraded as well. And so CO2 Second Chance, this is their wording, revises and enriches the original competitive game of CO2 published in 2012, and also includes a brand new cooperative game in which the players have to collaborate to save the world, losing victory points each turn they don't achieve their goals. Co-op mode has an individual secret goals everyone must meet to win the game. Solo play is already unlocked as a stretch goal as well. Now, this is weird. Co-op has individual secret goals that everyone must meet in order for everyone to win the game. I'm wondering how they pull that off, or if it's a miswording, because essentially you have a secret goal, but if the three of us are playing, we all have to meet our goal for all of us to win.
Maybe the secret goals have something to do with hurting another player, but they just don't know that you're doing that for your goal?
Maybe. So I don't know.
I don't know. The wording is a little unclear, because I read it as everyone must meet their goal to win. I was thinking it was more of a semi-co-op than a full co-op.
Like the Dead of Winter situation.
Yes. So where you have to beat the board to win, but beating the board doesn't automatically make you win.
Right. And hopefully on an individual basis, because I like the way like Dead of Winter does it, where if everyone can win and achieve that goal, but if you don't hit your personal goal, you don't get to win with the group. I like that. But if it's I didn't meet my personal goal and therefore we all lose.
I think it's more like the Dead of Winter hidden traitor scenario.
If anyone knows for sure, let me know.
Yeah.
Because this one is definitely on my list of things that it's slatted into I must buy this.
This next one sounds fun.
I'm going out of order. Are you talking about Treasure Mountain?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll go Treasure Mountain next. All right. Well, to finish up with CO2 Second Chance, it goes until February 28th. It is €65, or about $80 US. It's 2-4 players and it plays about 2 hours. All right, Treasure Mountain. This one is a dwarf-themed board game for 2-4 players using unique bumping worker placement mechanics based on the size of your dwarf's beard.
It just sounds so much fun. It does sound like I might get a little take that, but
it's interesting.
Beard size. I love it. Beard size
matters, exactly. I mean, when you're a dwarf, it matters. So this one actually looks pretty cute. It has its meeples, and each meeple has a little sticker on there. And
I hope they have female meeples with beards.
Dwarves, you can't tell the difference. They look the same. Yeah,
it's true.
It's true. They both have beards. It's all fine. But yeah, so I think the stickers have different sized beards on them, or maybe the meeples are different sizes. So I haven't done a whole lot of like main hardcore research on this, but I was scrolling through. I was like, oh, what's the new stuff? I'm like,
too funny.
Yeah. Bumping bearded dwarves. I think that's a, yeah, that's a nursery rhyme. You're gonna teach player three this new movie. But yeah, so I'm looking into it. It's a 2 to 4 player game, plays in 1 to 2 hours. It's only $55, and you know, that's for all the cool components. So as it gets closer and I get more and more interested in possibly pulling the trigger, right now it is on my list, but things get bumped around. I will give you more detail on that. And another one that I'm looking at is Dice Odyssey. Oh, so the last one, I have to do this. The last one was Treasure Mountain. Now, Dice Odyssey. This one is a fusion of the best of RPGs and tabletop games, a dungeon punk setting, stunning art, playable time frame, and dice, and more dice. Again, that's their description.
It's promising a lot.
Yeah. They are right on the dice part. And apparently I'm going through a dice phase right now, because anytime I see like, oh, look, a huge handful of dice where I can roll and like simulate going through a dungeon, I want to get this. So this is why this is on my list. There's just, again, this is one of those things. It goes till February 21st. So I have 2 weeks to decide if this is going to be the game for me or not. So I'm looking into it. Maybe it's a 2 to 5 player, 90 minutes, $74. I don't know where 74 comes from. It's less than $75, though. I can say.
I like even numbers.
Yeah. Less than $75. Mm-hmm. So
might as well be $74.99.
Might as well. It might be. I don't think Kickstarter allows you to do... No, they allow you to do anything, I'm pretty sure. I need to do a Kickstarter. All right. So that's the watch list, the Kickstarter watch list. And that last one was Dice Odyssey. So if you like dice and dungeon crawls, give it a look. Review of the Kickstarter week. Sydney and I actually played this yesterday, and we really wanted to get Kitty to play it before we recorded, but there is some concern of a small baby waking up, so we want to
get recording first.
So we are going to sell Kitty on this game,
and we're teasing her because the game is sitting on the table in front of her.
I'm already sold on this game, to be fair, guys. I looked at it last week when, because all the Kickstarters are still showing up at my house.
Not so, all of them, but a lot of them.
A lot of them are still showing up. So this, Chris opened last week in front of me, and it is so cool looking.
It's as cool as it looks.
The presentation of this game, it is second only to Mechs vs. Minions. So we've talked about Mechs vs. Minions in the past, and the trays in that game all have lids, and it stacks, and you pull everything out, and it's just like... You look at it, everything's gorgeous and beautiful. This has the exact same system. You have 3 different trays that you can pull out. Each one has the different components in there. It has a nice, each of those have covers on it. The miniatures are really, really cool. The base tray at the bottom of the box fits everything perfectly. And then the top trays like hold them all down.
This is coming from someone who guts a game when he gets it and puts it all into little baggies and labels the baggies and doesn't ever keep it in what it came in.
Yeah, this is staying in what it came in. So the idea behind Grim Forest is you are playing a little pig.
Yep.
I would say one of the 3 little pigs, but there's actually 4 pigs because it's up to 4 player
non-canonical
game. Yes, exactly. And pretty much every Grimm character, Grimm fairy tale. Is it Grimm fairy tales?
Yeah.
Brothers Grimm. That was what I was looking for. All of those characters are there. So you have Cinderella, you have the Little Mermaid, you have the 7 dwarfs, you have like
Little Red Riding Hood.
Little Red Riding Hood, the Wicked Witch of... Well, not the Wicked Witch of the West, but...
Rapunzel.
Yeah, Rapunzel. All of these fairy tales where you would normally associate them with Disney, because that's what Disney does, is take Grimm fairy tales and rebrand them. All of these things are in the box. And some of them will be your friend. So you're playing one of the pigs, and you could have one of these characters as friends. And then there's a whole bunch of cards that are fable cards. And the fable cards are kind of a... When I first read the rules, and I think when Kitty first read the rules, we thought it was going to be very Take That.
Yeah.
It turns out it's actually not very Take That, even though the cards like say, you know, take a resource from another player or do this or do that with other players or whatever. The way the game works is you have three different areas that you can... One area is forest that you can gather wood from. One area is the wheat fields.
If you think of the three little pigs, one house was built out of straw, one wood, one brick.
Exactly. So you have each of those three different areas. And on your turn, you're going... You have three cards in your hand that will correspond to one of those areas. And you're going to put that face down. And then everyone's going to flip up at the same time, and your little pig is going to go to that area. All the resources on that area, you will split evenly, and any leftovers just remain on the area for the next round. Now, the fabled cards, if you when you play your face-down gather card, which is where you're the card I was just describing, you can also play a fabled card on top of it. The fabled cards will say things like, steal a resource from another pig at your location. So I'm not targeting Kitty directly, but if she happens to go to the brick spot and I'm going to the brick spot, then I get to steal a resource from her. So it's sort of this passive, I think she might be going to get brick, so I'm going to play this card so I can steal from her. But if she knows I know that she might go to brick, then she could go to forest and completely miss out on that.
It's also hedging your bets, because if you're going somewhere and you only have one fable card in your hand, you might as well use it.
Exactly. So, and it's really cool. And then you're building these three little houses. So you have to build a straw house. No, you have to build three houses. You have straw house, wood houses, and brick houses.
And you can build any kind of house.
Any kind of house.
You do have to build them one at a time, though.
Yep.
And all of the same thing. So if you build the walls to a base, the wall has to be the same material as the base.
Yep. So essentially what the rule is, you can build up to five houses on your little area. You can only have one of each type in construction at a time. So if I have a straw house that I have the base for, I can't start another straw house. I have to finish my straw house, and then I could start another one. The game ends as soon as one person has three houses built. If there's a tie, because that can all happen in the same turn, if there's a tie, then you look at the quality of the houses. So the person with the most brick houses wins, then the most wood, then the worst, most...
Wheat straw.
And then if there's still a tie... Then you look at the first person to build brick, and that is the tiebreaker. And there's only ever one person who was the first person to build brick. So there is going to be a winner. It plays really fast. Like, it almost feels – it's so much fun, and all these figures – because there's monsters too, and they're all little like 3D miniature figures as opposed to 2D miniatures. they're all miniatures. And it's so much fun that, like – once you've built your three houses, you're like, it's over already. Let's play it again.
I'm really hoping player three stays asleep, because he could wake up anywhere from 1 minute to 2 hours from now. It's really definite when he wakes up. So if he stays asleep, I'm going to make you guys play this after we record.
Deal. All right. Let's get into some feedback, shall we?
All right. Let's get into some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of their previous episodes, email them or go to their Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
You know, when you're on the show, you are one of us.
One of us. All right. So from Emil Geiger, thanks for the great podcast. I've been a regular listener since around episode 47. I have not gone back to listen to all of them from the beginning, but I have listened to quite a few early ones as well. I have a bunch of comments that have built up. One is on trick-taking games.
All right. So first of all, thank you. And I think everyone should go back and listen to all of our episodes, starting at episode 0 and working your way forward.
Except for 0, 1, 2, 3. They're not as good.
You can start at 4.
But, yeah.
But you'll appreciate 4 more. What if you go through 0, 1, 2, and 3?
That is true.
Yeah. You'll appreciate me so much more.
Also, everyone strap in. We're about to learn Pinochle. Ready, go.
All right. Continuing, I was really surprised that you Midwesterners, except Josh, did not mention Pinochle. It is all my dad's side of the family's plays at every family gathering, Michigan and St. Louis. It uses a special deck consisting of ace, king, queen, jack, 10, 9, each suit twice, 48 cards. Players bid for the number of points they expect to take in the hand. Points can be won in two ways. First is meld, which is counted before the trick-taking portion of the game. Players are awarded points for certain combinations in their hand. For example, four kings of different suits, king, queen, in suit, etc. A jack of diamonds and queen of spades is called a pinochle and worth 40 points. But if you have two pinochles, you get 300 points. Second, points are awarded for the power of the cards in each trick that you take. Power goes ace, 10, king, queen, jack, 9. So there's a set-making aspect as well as a trick-taking aspect. Winning the bid gives you the right to declare trump, and some variants let you get to trade a couple cards with your partner if you win the bid. This adds a bluffing, press your luck aspect, since you might be bidding on a card you may not have until after you win the bid, or maybe you don't get in the trade at all.
So what I have determined, because this Pinochle sounds complicated for the sake of being complicated, very much like cribbage, when we were talking about cribbage, where you have all of these like nuanced rules. If you play doubles, you get this. It seems... And all these games are, they could be part of our ancient games as well. Like Pinochle, I think, has been around forever. It could have been in our card game, too. I have never played Pinochle.
I have never played Pinochle. The only experience I have with Pinochle is getting really mad that I couldn't find a regular deck of cards. I could only find a Pinochle deck when I'm trying to play solitaire.
I have been in the same situation.
I was going to say, I've never found a Pinochle deck of cards before, because it sounds like you need to either use two decks of cards or a special Pinochle deck.
Yes. Yep, you have to lose two decks of cards or a special Pinochle deck. Absolutely true. It also happens to be a Euchre deck, though. So you have two Euchre decks in one Pinochle deck. It's because Euchre uses 10 or 9 through A's.
Yeah.
So I might get a Pinochle deck so I can play Euchre tournaments. Hearing this described, it doesn't sound as complicated as I thought it might be. So I might have to try it. Now, what Emil also sent me, though, was a picture of a game that his wife's grandfather published back in the 60s. This game was called Spotluck. And the rules, he sent me a picture of the page of rules. It is fantastic. It is 6 bullet points of rules. And this is where we were in our game technology in the 60s. The first rule on here is each player rolls the pair of dice. The player with the highest roll plays first. Okay, that's fair. Each time a player rolls the dice, he adds the numbers and places a chip over the number on his card. For example, if a player rolls a 2 and a 4, he will cover one of the 6s. So there's two things there. First of all, I should describe that there's a board that's 6x6, and it ranges, 6x6. So the upper left corner is 2, the bottom right corner is 12, and then it has all of the combinations that you can add two dice together. What really I love about step number two, though, is describing that you're rolling two dice and then how you add them together to get a final total. I just love that. If you roll doubles, you always play again. And really the whole goal is, it's kind of like bingo with two dice. So your goal is to cover up all the 7s, because there's a diagonal row of 7s. So if you cover up all the 7s and one row, he calls them row, but it's actually row or column of other numbers, or you can do the doubles diagonal, so 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. If you have two things, then you win the game. This game seems awesome. Also, when I first read the rules, I thought they used actual potato chips, which I think would be great. So it turns out
my board game pieces. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I think this would be great because, well, Sydney and I just played Chocolate Warship.
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. It was basically just Battleship, and he won, but I ate the chips. Yeah.
I think you could play this with Hershey's Kisses, and it'd work out fine. The funny thing is, anybody could do this. Just draw a grid 6x6, and you could play this game. But Emil, this was great to see. All right, one more piece of feedback, and then we'll actually get on topic.
All right, so we have this is from Michael Ohl on Board Game Geek. You all did a really good job with the advice you gave. Oh, this is feedback from our playing games at conventions.
Yes.
And playing and running. So you did a really good job with the advice you gave. Things were spot on and general enough to cover most conventions you may attend. The best advice you really did cover well, which is always act like you know what you're doing.
It gets you into movie theaters, too. Like, seriously, you could walk in any movie theater by just, nope, I'm supposed to be
here.
Gets
you in a lot of places. Yeah. I think that's how that lady who keeps getting on flights at Chicago does it.
Yeah.
She just walks in with confidence.
Yep. Yeah. It works.
So he goes on. There are a few things that stand out for me, demoing games in general, as well as convention advice that I would like to add on.
Yeah, we should mention that Michael has been mentioned in the past, I don't want to say a professional game demoer, but as close to it as you
get.
So he demos games at different game stores and conventions and things like that.
All right, so I'm going to read just his general bullet points. He's got lots of info on these. You should go check it out on our Board Game Geek page and leave him some feedback. I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. All right, so first is follow all the convention rules. Enforce and follow them.
Yep.
So that's important. Player aids are always helpful. There's lots of them available on Board Game Geek. manage your expectations. Not everyone's going to like the game. So.
Or you.
Or you. Yeah. I'm sure that people didn't like me.
That's not true. Except for that one. But we won't talk about that.
Use practice rounds. It can be tough because people might not like that you're throwing away part of the game, but nobody wants to sit there and listen to a 20-minute explanation.
Yeah, and especially if you're playing a full game, a practice round helps if you're teaching. Let's do a practice round and then reset it. If it's a demo, everything's a practice round in a quick, shortened demo.
I was going to say, it also depends on what kind of game you're playing, how long it is.
Yeah.
But it's usually not a bad idea.
Yeah.
This may feel a little mean at first, but start on time. I think we did talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, if players are showing up late, it's awkward for everybody.
It's also up to them to have the etiquette to know that they're showing up late.
Yeah.
So
my advice is be on time. Yeah. prepare. Learn the game before you go. And that is the most important thing for sure.
Yeah. And it really helps in making it seem like you know what you're talking about. Because you'll actually know what you're talking about.
That's the best way. That's the only way I know how to seem like I know what I'm talking about is to actually know what I'm talking about.
Now, I will say on this one, don't let that stop you from trying to run a game, though. Because a lot of times gamers will help each other out. So if you're like, I want to go out there, I want to try, but I don't want to, you know, to let someone down. As long as you're giving it your all and you're there and invested in them, everyone will have a good time and you will get through it together and hopefully have fun. If you have one person that's sitting there, it's like, well, you were supposed to know the rule book inside and out and I don't want to do anything and therefore this is the worst experience ever. That person's never going to be happy anyway.
I was going to say, they weren't going to be happy no matter what.
Yeah.
Forget them.
So don't be intimidated. It's actually quite fun.
Gamers are super nice and super helpful a lot of the times. If you, just like, I always seem super nervous. Even when I'm not super nervous, I think I come across as super nervous in person. And yeah, everyone's really nice.
Everyone is. Yeah. Michael and I also had a little bit of back and forth on selecting the right role-playing game for you. So if you're into role-playing games, I'm going to refer you to the site to be a participate in that discussion. There's a few of us now back and forth on this one. It's really kind of talking about what is a good first role-playing game and why. So as always, you can find it on go to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. That's just a shortcut link directly to our Tabletop Game Talk podcast page on Board Game Geek. If you scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll see our forums down there. Also, Adrian Dung posted some Dice Tower videos in our episode on vocabulary for games. So Dice Tower did a couple videos on kind of explaining general terms, and he posted those videos there. So, all right, one more thing, and then we'll go on topic.
All right, so we have a quick question this week. It's a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Terrence. Chris mentioned how he can be shy. Has the podcast helped or made it worse? Maybe people approaching you makes it easier, or people who know so much about you makes it more awkward.
So, and I think Kitty can kind of comment on this as well. And like, I'm interested in your take on this. I don't think it's actually changed it one way or another, besides the fact that people assume that I'm like really outgoing. Like people just kind of make that assumption. So, and I am. Don't get me wrong. I mentioned last week, it's like once the floor is yielded to me, I own it. It's mine. I have no problem taking it over. If you've ever been to a live show, which I know is a micro fraction of our audience, but I have no problem being in front of people. It's like injecting myself into a situation that I'm not currently a part of, that I'm not actually that good at. So I'd rather just kind of watch and see what's going on.
You don't approach the group.
I don't approach the group. People knowing about me, that one I got over pretty quickly. Like when people come up, it's like, oh, and this and this and this. I'm like, oh, right. Everything I've ever said, you know, even though I'm struggling to remember your name at the moment.
I found that I can't repeat jokes sometimes now. Like I only have like 4 jokes a week and I can't use them more than once anymore because everyone hears them on the podcast.
Yep. That's another thing too. It's like, have you listened to the episode I'm talking about? Because now I'm like saying the same things all over again.
Mm-hmm. So Spencer's coworker, Andy, gets me on it.
But whatever the case, I love doing the podcast. I love interacting with people. Once that initial ice is broken, I have no problem. So if you ever see me at a convention, I'm almost always wearing our shirt. Do not feel bad coming up to me, because I will immediately fall into a very good place, happy place. All right, ready? Do this topic thing. I'm going to press this button.
In this episode, we're talking about the perfect game store. What must it do or have? What must it not do or have? And if money were no object, what would be the game store we'd want to run?
That was my question, because I want money to not be an object.
Right. So
this topic was brought to us by...
Woohoo!
Well, Sydney. I'm like, I need you to come on the podcast to replace Josh for a week. And she's like, okay, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, what do you want to talk about? And then she ponders for a little bit, and she's said something about game stores. I'm like, we could make that interesting. Let's talk about the theoretical perfect game store. This has created a ton of buzz on the input thread in BGG. Like, it's one of the most input. And then you put out a...
I actually surveyed quite a few people I know, because I know gamers from a lot of different places with a lot of different backgrounds. And I asked them, and I got a lot of feedback from my friends. And there's some similar veins, but some really interesting, unique responses.
Yep. Now, I would say that the very first post on the thread, this was from Brad. We're just going to go down those real quick, because I think they kind of cover the absolute basics. A clean game store. So very clean. Yes. Well organized with little clutter kind of goes with that. Accessibility, entrances, and facilities. You have to have a bathroom in your game store.
Yes.
I have left game stores before because I've had to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, well, I don't have time to buy this. I just really need to go down to McDonald's. And
you should also be able to walk through aisles with a purse without knocking everything over.
That is so true.
Yeah. Yes. Don't build dominoes out of your game because they will get fallen. Let's see. A knowledgeable staff that can answer questions without being pushy. I agree. Have a diverse staff that enjoys a wide range of games. Foster a welcome environment where everyone feels safe. Offer gaming space to play games that have some sort of library to demo games. Be willing to place orders for games that are hard to get. Be willing to take pre-orders so consumers have easier access to new releases. And sell some type of food or snack. Even better would be an actual kitchen, but that is asking a lot. I like all of these. Some of them are like having a kitchen. I have yet to see a game store with a kitchen. I have seen game store. Oh, wait, that's not true.
The one in Evanston,
The
actually.
One in Evanston has a kitchen. They do like paninis.
Yeah.
They're actually kind of lighter on the game inventory, where they have a kitchen and they also have a big game space.
Yeah. So do you guys disagree with any of those? Or should we elaborate on any of them?
Organization is my big thing. So a lot of game stores seem organized when you walk in. All the games are like nicely on shelves, but how are they organized? Because I feel like you just kind of close your eyes and point, and like there's no like genres. They're often organized just by size.
And what'll fit on what shelf they have available.
Yeah.
And also the current hotness. Like if really cool games are in the front, but they have nothing to do with each other, I don't know if I'm going to like more than one of them.
Yeah.
I recently went into a game store, and the person that was working there was also the owner, which oftentimes is the case.
Yeah.
You'll see the owner working there quite a bit because you don't make a lot of money running a game store. But he told me, he's like, oh yeah, all our games are organized by publisher. And immediately I'm like, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. The only person that cares about publisher is you. Because I'm looking for game types or genres or...
I do have a couple favorite publishers.
Sure.
But it's not a great organization scheme.
Yeah. So maybe. Fantasy Flight was the only one where I'm like, you can organize their games. You can put all the Fantasy Flight games in one spot. They all have the same look. They're all Star Wars.
That would be like organizing it by art. As cool as that would be to have a lot of games with the same artistic style if they're games you don't like to play.
Yeah.
It's a tricky choice. I personally like it when I walk in and the newest stuff's up front.
Like, it should be like a bookstore where there's like a display at the front. These are our new bestsellers. But then once you get past that, they're also, you know, in their genre area. So like, you know, you can go and look at like, oh, I want some, you know, 4-player quick play games. I'd like some deck building games. I'd like some point salad games. They're never organized that way. No.
Also, variety is very important because if you either don't get a lot of new games in, or if you don't have kids games, but you have a lot of grown-up games, then you can't bring your kids in. And having a lot of different things that people can play might get people to play more games than they already do.
Yeah. I think, so Cat and Mouse, which is a game store in Chicago that I've gone to quite a bit, they have a pretty good organization. So they do a lot of puzzles and stuff as well. So they have like their puzzle stuff, they have their kids stuff, they're more mass markety stuff. So your Risk, Monopoly, that kind of thing. They have a role-playing section. And then they have a hobby game section. And the hobby games, it's not huge, but I can go over there and I can spin around. There's like three different shelves of games and I can see. And there'll be a little yellow sticker below all of the games that are new. So even though they're all in one spot and they're kind of mixed in, they still get called out. And one of the other things I really like about them is they have employees, obviously, but they'll have employee recommendations each week. And they'll put a sticker on it.
I was going to say that. That's one of my favorite things in both game stores and bookstores is to see the employee recommendations with like a little description of why they're recommending it.
Or other games that that specific person likes.
Yep. Which, and that is really important too, because then it's like, oh, I like this game. And if I like this game, or this game, and they do, then this one might be something I like as well.
They also have an organization that is not necessarily by genre that I do really like. They have a section that is gateway games and a section that is two-player games. So other things that will influence what I buy will be a way that they organize it.
Yeah. Now we have an Amazon store in Chicago. I'm not sure they're common everywhere, but we have like one of the earlier ones. And what's interesting with that one is they have some board games, some of the more popular stuff, and they actually have Amazon reviews underneath the different games.
Interesting.
With how many stars and how many ratings and everything you would see on the Amazon website with the physical game in front of you.
Yep. Well, something that would be amazing to me, and I've never seen this in a game store, BGG reviews. So it's so easy to say, okay, there's this new game coming in. I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to basically go to the BGG page and say, here is the current rating on BGG and here's a couple, you know, reviews or something. It takes a little bit more work, but if you're trying to like be a service to people, like, you know, is this something good? Here you go. Now, you don't necessarily have to put that on everything because honestly, it's a 10-star rating on BGG. And a 6 sounds really bad, but a 6 is actually a pretty good review on BGG because people tend to go with extremes, right? So 6 is, yeah, it's above average. It's not bad. I would play it. Or it's a 1 or 2. So I've never seen it, but I think it would be kind of cool.
Well, another way to be a service to the customers is to have like a game library to be able to walk in and play games, which also includes having tables and places to sit.
Yeah. Jason mentions that there should also be scheduled events. How do you guys feel
about
that?
That's what I was going to just say. Jason, same wavelength. I really like it when there's at least one or two kind of open play nights, or we're going to have a game, or we're going to introduce a new game, we're going to have people there to teach it to you, different nights of the week, and to have those like well advertised.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of stores have them, but you have to kind of be in the know, search it out.
Or following them on social media.
Yeah, to know that those things are coming up. If you walk in the store, you don't often see like a calendar of our upcoming events, which I would love.
And I've seen, I've been to a number of game stores, so I'm just kind of using arbitrary examples. Some of these might be the same, some of them might be different. I've walked into a game store and they have a calendar. Usually it's some kind of dry erase calendar, laminated, scotch taped to the wall, where it's like they have Friday Night Magic, Wednesday Night Open Play, and the rest of the calendar is blank.
Or they'll have Friday Night Magic, Saturday Night Magic, Sunday Night Magic, Monday Night Magic.
Typically, you don't have that. Friday Night Magic is a Wizard of the Coast sponsored thing. But yes, you will tend to see a little bit more magic heavy events, which is fine because I don't know if we're going to get into it on this episode because I don't actually have all the knowledge I'd want to have. But most game stores, from what I hear from people who know this thing, are funded by magic. Magic is what makes the money, pays the bills.
That sounds so like whimsical. Like, game stores are funded by magic.
Dark magic. Cardboard dark magic. But yeah, so it is kind of the driving force. But if you follow that model to board games, that's not a bad model. you'll have some, like, open gaming's fine, but it can be intimidating too. You don't know what you're going there. I went to this was way back when Dominion was relatively new. It was a Dominion tournament. And I'm like, as long as I can get there, I definitely want to go because this is a hot new game. They're providing it. There's prizes. I'm going to go and I'm going to play and I'm going to buy something because I'm in the game store. And that's
having tournaments of any kind is really a big draw because there are lots of different living card games that you can have a random once a month tournament and people will show up. Or if you're willing to teach the game, if somebody at the game store is willing to teach a new game coming out or any game at all, then that's something that people will show up for.
Yeah. We used to do Dice Masters at the Dice Dojo, Chicagoland Games, which is probably Chicago's best game store. I can't think of anything as far as like size and selection.
The most games, yeah. For sure.
Most games, all the new stuff. Everyone who works there is very knowledgeable.
It is a little terrifying to walk into, though, because it feels like you might be avalanched in games at any moment. But it's really good.
Yeah, games stacked up 10 feet high all around. No, they're on shelves and they look mostly safe, but it is like this overwhelming.
That's the one where I grab my purse in front of my chest and kind of make myself small because I'm like, but also like in wonder because there are so many games. Yeah.
And the wall of games that they have for their demo library is just as impressive.
It's crazy.
Yeah. You walk into the other room and if you pick a game that is on the lower end of the wall, you have to hold the rest of the wall in so it doesn't fall over when you want to play the game.
They have a lot of IKEA shelves, but there is a number. Yeah, they are stacked up. It's pretty bad. Not bad as in bad. Bad as in there's a lot of games that you have to.
Yeah, it's a good problem.
It's a good problem to have. They also have a designated magic counter. So they have their retail counter where they check out the games. And then if you want to do anything with magic singles, talk magic or anything, you go to the back part of the store. It's not really the back. It's the front.
You don't have to go through the beaded curtain. Yeah. There's no like bouncer standing there giving you the okay. Yeah, no, it's just the back half of the room.
Yeah, the back half of the room. And that is the magic counter, and that's where they have their magic expert at and all the accessories for magic there. So they kind of split it up in a way where, okay, here's our trading card stuff, we have to have this here, it's making us all the money, but then here's the board game stuff, so you don't have to wade through magic to get your board game and get your stuff. And then they have a nice role-playing section there with more than just like Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder. It's like a lot of different indie stuff as well. I love seeing that kind of selection. And then for them, half their space is open play area.
Yeah.
It's just table after table after table, and they do a lot of magic tournaments there.
And there's lots of meetups that end up going there. So people that are completely independent of the game store will decide to show up there and play their games and maybe end up buying dice because they need it for their game or trinkets or snacks or whatever.
Now, it's not the perfect game store. There's one thing. So apparently they do have a rewards program because we haven't mentioned that yet, but that's one of my biggest things. I want a rewards card.
Surprise, surprise.
I want to gamify my game buying. Like, I need that. So, and the reason for it is, number one, it gives me loyalty to the game, or to the game store, right? Because, all right, I have this rewards, I'm building these points. Cat and mouse, once you get up to 20,000 points, you get a $200 shopping spree. And you can redeem them much earlier, but it's like, the longer you wait, the bigger percentages you're getting back. And I'm like, nope, I'm just going to keep buying stuff until I get to 20,000 points. So it works on people like me. But it also gives everyone a chance to say, okay, I might be buying this a little bit more than I would spend if I went to online. But since they have like a loyalty program, I feel like I am rewarded for giving them my loyalty. And Chicagoland Games apparently has one, but they never talk about it on checkout.
I didn't even know they had one.
Exactly. I didn't either. I was talking to the owner the last time I was there, and he's like, no, we have one. We need to do a better job at promoting it. I'm like, yeah, you do, because I spend a lot of money here, and I've never gotten any credit for it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I would like to see more of. They do have a very open policy for bringing food and beverages in. They don't provide it on site, but you can have pizza ordered there.
They actually have fast food menus at the front.
Yep, which is a great compromise.
Yeah.
So
I think snacks are totally important, especially having them there to buy so that the game store itself can make a little extra money and you can feel like you're supporting them, even if you're there to play a tournament that you haven't given any money to the game store otherwise.
Yeah.
So, and as far as their friendliness and non-pressure, whenever you walk into that store, hi, how you doing? Can I help you look for anything? No, I'm just browsing. Okay, let me know if you have any questions. That's it. As opposed to the last game store I was in where I walk in, hi, hi. And then he comes over to me and just talks to me for 15 minutes while I'm trying to look at games. And by the end, I was like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to get out of this conversation. You know, it's just a little bit awkward when somebody's like telling you all the cool new stuff.
The hard sell. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I just want to browse. Just let me browse. I'm happy, happy browsing.
Another important thing to me is community. Like if a game store builds community, whether it's around Magic or around their local community, having people come in at a certain day or night for a specific event means more to the community when you're supporting your local game store.
Yeah. Michael, I want to give a shout out to Meeple Madness, which is Michael's local game store. He says it's the largest game store he's ever seen and as close to perfect as I've seen. So it's just huge. There's a virtual tour online, apparently. You can go to Google Maps and tour it. So that's Meeple Madness. The owners are great to work with. They bring outside help. And this is a big thing. They bring outside help in. If I'm a game store owner, I can't necessarily be there to teach every game. I can't run every program, but I can encourage it. So for Cat and Mouse, the reason why I was, been there so much, I actually went to them and said, hey, I want to run organized play D&D here. Do you have anybody to do that? No. Would you like me to do it? Sure, absolutely. And then Linda, who's the owner of that store, worked with me to make sure I had everything I needed to be able to run that program. And then I would come in. At that time, I was coming in every week. And that really brought people into the store. They had a set schedule on there. Every one of us that were there, we'd usually walk out with buying something. I came away with two or three new board games. That's where most of my collection got bloated from. And that really helped build a community. So what Michael's doing here is they're having people come into demo games. So these are people that are oftentimes not necessarily hired, but promoted by with the publishers. A lot of these different publishers, you can sign up to say, hey, I want to demo your game. And then you can go to these different game stores and set up times to demo these games. So I think that that's a really good thing for game stores to have. I would utilize that. Go to this game store, learn to play this new game. That's something I would like to do. You have to make sure that somehow it's doesn't feel like high pressure sales, though, because I tend to get that with demoing.
It's helpful that it's when you do it at a convention too, and you're learning to play the game by demoing it before you buy it. It's just the same concept at a game store.
Yep.
The only thing is, if you're demoing a game there, you also have to make sure the game is available to buy. Because a lot of times at conventions or at stores, if it's a really hot new game, they're teaching you how to play it. You're like, oh, I love this game. You go to pick it up. Oh, we're totally sold out of it.
Yeah.
And that's a crappy feeling.
Yep. And we're going to get into the things we don't want to see in games in a moment. So a couple other things he says. They're very friendly staff and represent almost all types of gamers, which is important. We're talking about if you're going to do staff recommendations. And this one's key. They're great with kids. So there are some places where you go where the person behind the counter is just – They fit in with a certain type of person, and then they completely don't fit in with anybody else. And they can come off a little off-putting and almost insulting at sometimes, depending on how they talk to you or talk down to you or...
Ugh, you haven't played this yet.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's just like this other game that no...
You haven't heard of that?
Yeah. So it's important to have somebody that's like good with people.
Yes.
Regular events, he mentions, reward program... and then regular special events. So a lot of different publishers will have release parties and like Magic and actually everything Wizards of the Coast can have like release parties and stuff. And having those special events is cool. Organized play where you can go and get special promos and stuff. Most games don't have organized play programs, but when they do, it's really cool to be able to go someplace and play that with other people that have similar interests in you. Should we talk about what we don't want to see in game stores?
There are quite a few things on that list as well.
Wait, you had something you wanted to read from Naomi, because I think her feedback was pretty good.
Sure. So one of my friends that I asked about this topic said, like best about game stores or what their favorite game store would have. And she says, a nice large collection of games that you can play is a must. It's particularly great if you can find pretty much anything they're selling in their library so you can try it out first. I like some snacks and drinks for sale. And of course, events you actually want to go to. At least in Tucson, that's where most of them seem to fall short. Their calendars are full of things, but usually very specific, like Magic the Gathering days. Lots and lots of those. which is great if that's something you want to play, but I feel like they're always having the same events around the same games. I want stores that have more events that vary more, or maybe just have a general game night every now and then. Also, really good website with lots of details about each event, more than just its name and time. A nice short description would be great. That's actually something we didn't mention, a website.
Yes. So, in website and social media, those are huge, huge musts if you really want to build a following and build it into your loyalty program somehow. You know, follow us on Facebook and you get 200 extra points or something. Like, that type of thing really goes a long way to help build a community. And that also gets your events out there. I like the idea also of having varied things. So special events, open game night, great. Open game night Wednesday is a common thing, or open game night someday is a common thing. And then what you should do, featuring the new hotness of the week, where you say you're going to be teaching that game. So it's an open game night. Anyone can come and play. This one game we're going to teach while we're here. That would be a cool thing.
Or also there's a possibility of just setting up on a meetup.com where a group gets together every month or every week at your game store, and you foster that, and you set it up yourself even, and just host it by being there.
Yep. Yes. Meetups, like hosting meetups, is a great idea. You have to have the space for it.
Yeah.
So a lot of game stores don't. What was the name of the game store we went to in Madison?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was lovely.
It was. So there's this game store in Madison. Google Madison Game Stores. I'm sure it'll come up. Madison, Wisconsin. And I actually went out of my way to go there the last time we were in GameholeCon. Actually, no, we were further north, and for some reason we were driving back and we decided to stop. Oh, maybe it was GameholeCon.
You're right.
But in any case, this game store was everything we're talking about. You walk in, it's nicely lit, it's clean. There are tons and tons of copies of the newest games. So it felt like this is, we have plenty of stuff for you to buy. And I want to buy this and this and this. It had a section for...
You're like that everywhere.
It's true. They had a consignment section set up. So and that's another thing that I think it's fun to have in a game store. For me, it's not a must have, but for a lot of people, it's very useful. Everything was split up by category. So you had your tactical games, you had your role-playing games, you had your family games, I'm not sure if they went down to like point salad and that type of thing. But it was really, really nice. And then if you walked back behind the beaded curtain, the beads were held aside, was the open play area, which was nice and bright and easy to see. And the atmosphere is friendly. And there was just this murmur of activity.
Did they have different sized tables?
They did.
Because that's one of my big things, is you'll see a lot of 4-player card tables. Well, if you want to play a 6-player game or a 2-player game, you either feel like you're wasting space, or you've got to scooch tables together. You feel like you're being an inconvenience, kind of.
I see a lot of the narrow 6-foot tables that are good for Magic, but not great for your typical board game. You know, so varied sizes of tables would be very good. But yeah, this... It was a great, and they had a rewards program that I signed up for, even though I live 3 hours away from there.
And it's actually, something that impressed me about them is that one of the things that they had was a very coveted Pathfinder book that had just come out recently. And what
D&D book.
Was it D&D?
Yep.
Thank you. Well, they had a D&D book that had come out recently, and they ended up only putting one on the shelf at a time so that somebody couldn't come in and buy 6 copies of it because there was only a limited number. What that made me feel like was that they really valued their own inventory. They knew their stuff. They cared about the material. They weren't just hiring a high schooler to sit the register.
Yeah. So I'm sure then, too, if somebody came in and was like, oh, there's only one copy. There's 2 of us here. We both wanted to buy it. They'd be like, oh, hold on, and pull out more for you. They'd really cater to you.
And that's a really cool feeling too.
Yeah.
Yep. And this is Pegasus Games in Madison, Wisconsin. So I had to Google it because it is probably as close to perfect as I've seen in a game store. Again, I don't think they served food, but there was a food place right next door that you could go to, and I didn't see any issues with them bringing back things to the games.
I mean, my perfect game store would have amazing seat cushions or even sofa chairs, so I don't know if that'll ever exist.
Yeah. All right. So, James, this is kind of funny. The first and second posts are just great opposites to each other. So Brad's here's all the things I want, and James is the perfect game store, I think, that Brazlist is perfect, is what he says. There's no real game store in my area, only a comic shop that reluctantly sells board games. This is my favorite. From what I hate to see, I think the store is a good example. Now, we're not naming any names. I don't think he posted it here. But he's like, do not answer questions about board games with, I have no idea about them. I do not think we should even sell them. Price the game. Don't price the games above MSRP, manufacturer suggested retail price, on boxes of new releases that aren't even out of print yet.
Oh, boy.
When you sell expansions for a game, stock the base game.
Oh, my gosh.
And after purchasing 10 games in one transaction, little over $520, state that you're happy. Do not state that you're happy to get rid of that junk.
So, oh my goodness!
So
there's no happiness in that purchase.
No. So James, I feel you. Like this is not right. This is not okay. And stores like this are stores that don't deserve us going to them and buying games from them. So this can be very controversial. I'm not going to try to be controversial here, but I'm just saying. It is cheaper to go online and buy games.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, without a doubt. Now, a lot of game companies are trying to like either release first in game stores or give special covers like D&D does for their books now to game stores so that they get you into the store and you can – there's a reason to be there besides something I can buy online. But at the same time – and actually I think Asmodee it has a minimum suggested – like you can't advertise – games for less than 20% of what the price is, even online. So game stores can give you bigger discounts, but nobody can advertise less than 20% so that it's not as attractive to go to Amazon or something and buy something super cheap. But if I'm going to a game store, be someplace I want to go, someplace I really like being at, like what you're doing. This is a hobby that people are really passionate about. And if you're not passionate about it as well, or at least friendly towards it, don't get upset when suddenly you're like, I don't know why no one buys these things.
Also, for someone that isn't passionate about it, I assume if someone who wasn't into gaming went into that store and looked at those games and met this same person, they wouldn't walk out with a game.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, no, I know, that's some stupid game. But here's this new Captain America comic. You know, it's like we all have our little niches of things we like. It doesn't mean that Captain – I don't think that Captain America comic is less because it's not a game. It's cool. It's a comic book. I'll read it. Sure. I'll also play this game over here. Be open-minded if you're going to work in a game store. All right, Kitty. You have to tell your story.
So I went to a game store that will not be named. And me and Spencer were kind of looking around. We were looking to expand our collection of board games. This is before I was on the podcast, before I really got into gaming.
I didn't realize this was that long ago.
Yeah, this was like probably like 4 years. This was when we moved to Diversey.
Okay.
So maybe like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
So we go in and we ask the employee, we're like, hey, we're just starting a game collection. We just have some really like basic like Catan, you know, like gateway games. What would you suggest as like a next step? And they're like, well, like, what do you like in a game? And we're like, we're really just looking to branch out. So like, what's a game that you enjoy? So they start describing Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective to us and how great it is, how the cases are so cool and all this stuff. We're like, okay, sold. And they're like, oh, well, it's out of print. So, you know, when a customer is asking for a game that you really enjoy, they mean a game you really enjoy that and they can buy at the store. but it was fun because it did, you know, put that on my radar. And it was like I was excited when it finally was back in stock.
Yeah, because they reprinted. I own it. This is one of my Red Sticky games because – I don't know why we're going into Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, but this game has a ton of case files in it. Well, 10, I think 10 different case files. With newspaper clippings and clues and pictures.
It sounds so cool.
It sounds like an escape room board gamey mix.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a mystery game where each one of these cases is its own things, but you're going through and you have to figure out based on this. And you open it up, it's like, this is actual newspaper in here. it's really cool.
It's what Deadline wasn't.
Yes. Yeah. I'm looking for the right group to play it with. I don't have any friends that like want to play this game. No one's ever heard of it before. Like we got to get through Pandemic Legacy season 2 first. Then we will do Sherlock Holmes.
Also, something that you passively mentioned earlier, the lighting in a game store actually matters a ton.
So much.
Yes. The other, and lighting is big, especially if you're expected to play the games. And number two, I hate walking into a quiet store. Hate it. So during the day, oftentimes there's not a lot of people in the store. It's just one person behind the counter. And it can be awkward being in a game store with just two people. It's like almost like standing in an elevator. You know, it's like, I don't know. There's a reason why elevators have music.
And most stores. And most stores.
Play some music. Now, when you're actually playing games and it's at night and it's open play and people are trying to talk and stuff, lower the music.
Turn
it off. But if there's nothing else going on, have a little bit of music in the background and try to be a little bit middle of the road with the music.
Here's my new suggestion is they should get Audible and they should just be playing like sci-fi books.
Yes.
Oh my, that is a brilliant idea, actually.
Right?
I was thinking nerdy music like Weird Al or different types of nerdy things.
D&D book where there's like the short stories read by celebrities. That would be so good to have playing, right?
I need to figure that one. I need to find that. I think, or this podcast.
Yeah.
So recommend to your local game store. They should be like just gaming podcasts because that's something.
There's a ton of them out there too. Yep.
And it's something that's actually topical, relevant to what's going on in that store, and you could literally play probably 40 hours a week of gaming podcasts. I will say, make sure you know what's on them. So if you're worried about language and things like that, you want to be more family-friendly. Anything on the Dice Tower Network is family-friendly, so you could. There's a ton of podcasts on there. But that would be kind of a cool thing to have playing too. When I used to go to Blockbuster Video, yes, I'm old, you know, they would have the little preview track. So you'd be like, oh, here's this trailer of a movie that I didn't know existed, but now I must get.
Yeah. And you walk into the game store and there they are doing a review of a game. And now that sounds really cool. Yeah. And you can pick it up right there.
GameStop does the same thing for video games. You know, you walk in and they always have a loop of like the new reviews and stuff. And it's like specifically curated for the store, but there's no reason why you couldn't take a podcast and just play that as you're going. The only thing I would say is if you're trying to play a game, having voices going on is not the greatest thing. So you might not want to do that during the gaming nights when people are actually trying to play. But when they're just in there browsing or you're there doing inventory by yourself because you work in a game store, I think it's a great idea.
That's actually also another thing is if you have some sort of play there where people need to communicate with each other and all of the tables in the back are very close together and it's hard to hear and things get really, really loud, having the space to spread people out is also very nice to have.
Yeah. Yep. I would agree. All right. Do we have anything more on this topic?
I don't think so.
I mean, I could talk forever and ever and ever, but
I think we've pieced together a nice game store.
Since we got on the Dice Tower Network, I've been looking around at other podcasts, and some of them are like 3 hours long. I don't want to get to that, so we'll stick with an hour. I like the nice hour level. So thank you for listening. If you want to follow us, we're at Tabletop Game TLK on Twitter. I'm Game Master Chris on Twitter. We're also on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. If you want to help support us, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. All our patrons get free entries into our contests. And when I say free entries, I mean automatically entered for free. Everyone's entered for free if you email me. You'll also get bonus entries, though, if you're a patron. And on that, which one of you wants to be Josh today?
I'm Josh today.
All right. Take it away.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons, Emil Jeljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, Josh isn't here to say anything witty, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, and Eric Huffman. Until next week, when we talk about the 10x10 board game challenge. Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So we're setting up Grim Forest?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Baby's sleeping, playing a game.
Awesome. Or feeding the baby and playing a game at the same time. We'll make it work. Mm-hmm.